It is time for the Beltway Blitz. We'll cover the NFL and the Commanders. Let's get it started on the hardwood. We'll talk NBA as well with Keith Smith of SpotTrack, but I wanted to start with these rumors that Trae Young is not only on the trade block, but the Wizards are one of the leaders in a sweepstakes to land him. What do you make of this, Keith? What's going on here in this trade discussion about the sharpshooting guard from Atlanta?
Yeah, I think we've reached the point where the Hawks and Trae Young have taken it as far as they can with their time together. The signs were out there when the Hawks didn't really entertain extension talks with Young at all. So now we're in a position for Trae Young where they're looking to find a trade. Sounds like the Wizards are interested. They do not have any kind of long-term answer at point guard. Bob Carrington's been a good young player, but I've seen him more as a combo guard type. So I think they're looking at, hey, Trae Young can come. He's a good offensive organizer. He can get guys set up and maybe get our offense moving and improve our guys that way. And if they get paid to do it, so much the better.
Yeah, so I wanted to get into that. Would it be for the actual services of Trae Young, or would it be for that deal, which, you know, isn't expiring? There's a player option. And I guess the second part there, Keith, is what about that player option? Is that something he's likely to pick up?
Yeah, so to the first part of your question is, I think it's both, actually. I think the idea for Washington is, hey, he can help. We don't really have a lot at point guard, and C.J. McCollum rumored to be going the other way if that's how that deal goes down. So he'll slide right in there, but he's a better passer, playmaker. He's much younger than C.J. McCollum, so I think they think they can help. But they're also going to eat, you know, at least close to $50 million this year, close to $50 million next year. So I think for the Wizards side is, hey, pay us a little bit just in case he does pick up that option. Or if, like, he just walks, we're not just going to eat $50 million, you know, for you this year, even $20 million with the difference between him and McCollum. But I think that's where this is headed. And I think what you're starting to see is Washington's theory, much like, did no surprise because a lot of them came from the Thunder in that front office, but let's get picks to take a vet in. We'll rehab that vet a little bit in their value, and then we'll get a pick if we trade them on the way out too. And I think that could be what happens here with Trae Young.
They've won 6 of 11. I worry a little bit about adding a piece like him. I mean, they have a top 8 protected pick. Should I be nervous about losing that pick?
I don't think so, because I think, you know, worst comes to worst. If it starts getting in the danger zone, you just all of a sudden some guys come up with back spasms. We used to say flu-like symptoms, but that's scary post-COVID. So somebody just said, oh, his back's bothering him, and all of a sudden guys sit out, and we might let's call it engineering a loss or two along the way.
So Young's been injured a bunch. It's a quad now, yeah. I guess. It's been day-to-day, it seems like, all season long, et cetera. Does that complicate matters at all? Is that something that's not a factor?
I don't think so, because I think there's no sense that anything he's dealing with is anything long-term or chronic. And again, some of this, especially if picks are coming, it's a little bit about eating the contract. So I think the Wizards are just saying, hey, we're still going to be in asset collection mode here a little, and if we can get Trae Young, he can help improve our other guys by making the game a little bit easier on them, so much the better.
Nationally in the NBA, give us a couple storylines to monitor here as we close in on the midway point.
Yeah, I think, one on-the-court thing that's not trade-related is, you know, are the Thunder we thought they were all of a sudden not playing real well? You mentioned the Wizards are 6-5 in their last 11. Well, so are the Thunder. So that is, you know, just kind of an interesting point to look at. This team that looked like they were going to roll to 70-plus wins, now we'll see. Are they just going through a bump in a rough patch? Sure, probably. They're probably fine, but watch that. And then, obviously, trade deadline is less than a month out. We're going to be, you know, focused on that because, you know, is Giannis going to decide he wants out? What's going to happen with Anthony Davis? Is Anthony Davis going to be related somehow in this Trae Young trade where we see maybe that gets worked into a multi-team trade where Davis lands in Atlanta? So a lot of things like that. The league feels pretty wide open. No one is terrified of the Thunder, even though everybody respects them and knows they're really good. But teams think they have a chance. And whenever you have a lot of teams that think they have a chance, teams get a little bit more willing to go for it.
Keith, thank you as always, buddy. Be well.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
You got it, my friend. Hit that NFL sounder. We'll localize this to New England, talking some Patriots with Doug Cott of the Boston Herald. Doug, how real is the criticism that the Patriots haven't played anybody, quote-unquote? We can relate to that. We did that last year, and then we went to the NFC title game. How real is that criticism?
It's pretty real. I mean, they've had a very easy schedule, but they haven't exactly like played down to the schedule. They've really beaten up on some of these bad teams. So I can totally understand the criticism about the bad schedule, but I mean, they beat the Ravens, who I know they didn't make the playoffs, but they're a pretty decent team. They beat the Bills, played close to the Bills and lost the Bills, beat the Bucs, beat the Panthers. Like, they've played the teams that could have given them trouble. That being said, it's been a pretty easy slate of games, and next year's going to be a significant difference for them.
We're going to be diving into various playoff teams every day on the Beltway Blitz over the next couple of weeks. We're starting with the Patriots here, and beat reporter Doug Kite of the Boston Herald. By the way, I think I looked at it, and there's five games that had they not have beaten a team, that team would have finished over 500. So this idea that they beat one team over 500, right. Okay, fine, but five games go the other way, and the Patriots don't beat them. Now those are all teams that are over 500, two against Miami, Baltimore, and that. There's others. What do you make of, and what kind of chances do you give Drake May to win MVP, and then also Mike Vrabel to win Coach of the Year?
I feel like, they're both tough because it's both difficult decisions. With Drake May, I would vote for Drake May. I know that some people have already put on Twitter that they've voted for Drake May among the 50 voters. But it also seems like people just want Matthew Stafford to be the MVP this season. And he's a good candidate as well. I mean, he's got the counting stats. Drake May's got the efficiency and advanced stats. So it kind of depends on what you value more. I think that, like, if those things are close and you've got the schedule in favor of Stafford, you've got the supporting cast in favor of Drake May, if it's close, then if you remove one of those players from their team, which team would be worse? I think it's pretty easily the Patriots. Patriots finished it with the number two seed. They finished first in their division. They had more wins than the Rams. So I would give it to May, but it seems like it's going to be pretty tight there. With Vrabel, it's harder to tell because there's still like seven or eight deserving candidates this year. A lot of first-year head coaches, Kyle Shanahan, Sean Payton, Mike McDonald. There's just so many good coaches out there who have turned their teams around. Once again, I think Mike Vrabel deserves it, but so do a bunch of other guys. So I think he's probably going to win it, but it's really hard to tell on that one.
Last year, Drake May didn't start the first five games, came in relief and a blowout loss against the Jets. Then it was up and down a lot. You certainly saw signs of some really good things. That's pretty clear and obvious. And here we are talking about him as either the MVP or a guy that's going to finish second in all likelihood. How did that growth happen? How did we get here?
It certainly helps that Josh McDaniels came in and settled the offense. I think they've been a really good team, but I think it's also just the second year leap that you sometimes see from quarterbacks, or, you know, in Josh Allen's case, it was the third year leap from him. We just saw it a little bit earlier from Drake May this year, but the guy had all the tools. He just put them all together. And as much as a better supporting cast, like Stephon Diggs coming in helps, as much as having Josh McDaniels or Mike Vrabel coming in, a lot of it is just Drake May's tools. I mean, like, those guys aren't making him a more accurate quarterback. And Drake May's accuracy took a huge leap this year. He was much smarter protecting the football. He was still very good, you know, using his legs as a weapon. So it was a number of different factors, but I give Drake May the most credit for it. Seems like he worked really hard, improved a lot as a leader, but just really seriously improved his game this year.
What do you make of the matchup with the Chargers in round one of the playoffs?
It's a really interesting matchup because the Chargers' weaknesses don't necessarily align with the Patriots' strengths. The Chargers have some offensive line issues, but the Patriots have not been great generating pressure off the edge this season. Harold Landry's hurt right now. Caleb Von Chasen's been a good addition, but he's not exactly like a premier top-tier pass rusher. So I like the Patriots' chances. I think they're going to win. But when you've, as we mentioned before, when you've only played one winning team this season with the Bills, like, would it really be a major surprise if the Patriots didn't win this game? No, but I do believe they're a good team. I think they match up well enough. I don't think the Chargers are a great team, and I'm still waiting to see it from Justin Herbert in the playoffs. I mean, he threw four interceptions the last time he was in the playoffs, so I don't think that he's exactly a proven commodity in the postseason. So give the Patriots a pretty good chance, but seems like it could be a good matchup.
Doug, thank you, buddy. Have a great week.
Absolutely, you too.
Yeah, and here's to ending that long national nightmare of no Boston championships. It's been almost a year. Let's talk about the Local 53, please. Michael Phillips, Odyssey Richmond, our pal. Miguel, Joe Witt's out, yada, yada, yada. But Cliff Kingsbury's out, too. What do you think?
My good. It feels... I'm going to use the word malicious, Danny, right? Because, like, this is a problem that could have solved itself if he had gotten a head coaching job elsewhere. Like, right, if you just lay low for a week or, you know, when they call for a reference, you're like, oh, yeah, we love working with Cliff. Like, it'd be a real shame if you hired him away. He gets hired as a head coach. You'd be like, ah, oh, we wish him the best, you know, et cetera. But doing it today, it almost costs him the opportunity at those jobs. Like, it's going to be really hard for a team to hire as a head coach a guy who got fired as a coordinator. It feels a little spiteful.
What do you think their issue was with him?
Well, I think that certainly the Jaden shutdown late in the year was the indication that, you know, in retrospect, that Adam Peters or whoever it was did not like the way Jaden was being used and didn't want Cliff to continue to use Jaden in that way, in a way that might put at risk the future of the team. But I also think, man, Jaden's feelings need to be a part of this too, because alienating your star quarterback is rarely a good way to conduct business, unless you've got long-term concerns about him too.
What's a good fit for Daniels, and how is that going to jive maybe with Dan Quinn and Adam Peters' vision of who they want at OC?
Yeah, it's tricky because, like, I think guys should be lining up to work with Jaden Daniels, right? I mean, I think that's a really good job with a great young quarterback. I'm still buying Jaden Daniels stock. I think he's still going to be an excellent NFL quarterback. But it also limits what you can get, right? Like, any name offensive coordinator isn't going to leave an OC job to come to another OC job where there's really no avenue to become head coach. You're like, my guy was Clint Kubiak all along. Like, you know, let's pair him with a great offensive coach, you know, who has a track record of helping quarterbacks succeed. That's not going to happen. He would leave for a head coaching job, not another OC job. So it limits the pool. Certainly you do get the sense that probably Adam Peters and maybe Dan Quinn have a vision in their head of the style of play they want him to play, and I'll be curious to see how that plays out in the search.
They also reportedly fired Bobby Johnson, their offensive line coach, today. What does that tell you?
Well, that was fascinating to me because there was so much praise lavished on Laremy Tunsil there yesterday. He was one of the few guys who got like a name check of praise yesterday. He's a Pro Bowler. We want to get a deal done. You know, it was the opposite of everything that was said. You know, nice things were said about Terry last year, but it never sounded like that. And then the coach in charge of that unit leaves. I'm curious about the whole thing, right? You get the sense they want to remake their style, their identity. I got a lot of follow-up questions. I certainly understand why they didn't want to talk about it yesterday, because you'd rather not answer those questions, but this feels like a full remaking of their identity offensively.
And to that end, I don't love that. Not necessarily the idea to improve the offense, but it's the, you didn't know any of this a couple of years ago? Like, players were drafted. Signings were made. You know what I mean? Like, Cliff Kingsbury is handing Adam Peters a note that says, draft me Josh Connerly. He was involved in the Ben Sinnott consultation. He's involved in Jaden Daniels, presumably. This was built for something else. Whether that works or not is, you know, obviously pretty important here, but that's kind of a head-scratcher, I guess, Michael.
Yeah, and throw the Brian Robinson trade on, you know, on that as well. Obviously, a guy who didn't fit Cliff's system. So certainly it's a fascinating mid-course correction, but also the timing of it. I mean, next year is a referendum year on DQ. Everybody understands that. If he doesn't win next year, you're moving on, and the offensive coordinator probably goes with him unless he has a spectacular season. Jaden is in the fifth-year option pickup after next year, and you're going to start long-term contract negotiation with a guy who got, you know, if you want to believe the reports, blindsided by this news this morning. That feels like not a great start. Like, it feels like me, you know, everybody wants to talk about the RG3 comparisons. Let's talk about heading down the Kirk Cousins tracks here, where you just don't feel the love, don't feel like you're part of the team, part of the family, part of the administration. I'm not saying all those things are going to keep Jaden from signing here, but the timing here is very curious to me.
Michael Phillips, the Richmonder, Odyssey in Richmond. Lastly, on Dan Quinn calling his own plays defensively versus going and getting one of the bigger name DCs that are out there, how do you see that playing out?
Well, you know, obviously everybody's going to say Raheem Morris, and I understand why, and they work well together. To me, Dan Quinn's got to produce a really good defense next year. It's got to have his stamp, his imprint on it, because if you're not an offensive guy and you're not the general manager, and if you're entrusting the defense to somebody else, what are you? You're Ron Rivera yelling about culture, right? Like, I think Dan Quinn's got to make a positive contribution to this team next year. I think that comes through defense. I think that's the best place for him to do that.
For Peters here, he made a big deal, it seemed like. The only thing he kind of said, I don't want to say, he's on the record with everything, obviously, but the only thing that he sort of took a stand on yesterday was, hey, anything that has to do with the coaching, that's DQs, right? He made a big point of that distinction when everything else, when they talk about collaboration and we're all of, you know, it's a hive mind, we're basically, you know, the Vecna and the Mind Flayer and everybody else in the Upside Down working together here. But all of a sudden, that one was, no, that's Dan's. I'll just support him with whatever he decides. Why? Make that make sense for me.
I will not be able to, Danny. Thank you for thinking that I might be able to, but it didn't make sense to me either. And I think there were a lot of unanswered questions coming out of yesterday. And certainly he's of that football style, playing it close to the vest. But in this interim period where all we have is this news, I think this is the first day where there's been legitimate questions about Adam Peters and his leadership going forward. Look, he could solve all those. He could have a great offseason. I think he's had great acquisitions. I think the Laremy Tunsil trade was good. I think picking up Debo was a good pickup. Javon Kinlaw was an unquestioned upgrade. Like, I think he's good at his job. But there were a lot of questions, and I don't feel like we got a lot of answers, Danny.
Michael, thank you, buddy. Good catching up.
Thanks, bud.
Hey, take care.
Take care of yourself. There's Michael Phillips. That is your Beltway Blitz on G&D. Who do you think was the bigger reason for Cliff being out from a relationship standpoint in that building? Do you think this was more about his relationship with Peters or Quinn? Was this an AP call or a DQ call? 800-636-1067 is the number. That's next on Grant and Danny.
I'm really just here to support DQ. The coaching staff is DQs, and I'm always here to help, like during the season and off season, however I can, you know, to help support him and help him make the decisions that he needs to make, and certainly wherever he needs. So it's not, I'm not involved in whatever decision it is. It's always DQ's call, and I have his back on whatever he wants to do.
There's not silos here, JP. Coaching and scouts, we connect, we talk a lot, we visit a lot, and so it's one of the things I enjoy most is those conversations. It's different perspective, different points of view, so it's as collaborative as I've been a part of.
That was Adam Peters first and Quinn second talking about hiring coaches. Peters saying it's up to Quinn when you want to fire a coach, when you want to bring in a coach for his staff. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Who do you think is more responsible for Cliff Kingsbury being out? And whose decision do you think this was? I don't want to forget that on Saturday, the report that started all of this speculation from Diana Rossini in The Athletic was that Kingsbury was at odds with Adam Peters. Didn't really have much to say about Dan Quinn or wanting to go in a different direction or not seeing eye to eye with him. That has been what we have found and unearthed and kind of the narrative that's been out there over the last day or two. And you've got people that are doing digging and getting information. And, I talked to a bunch of people, both inside and outside the building, over the last 24 hours. And what you hear is, hey, the vision may not be copacetic. They may not see eye to eye on how they want to develop Jaden Daniels. But it has been more about Quinn, obviously, making this decision than Peters. That answer you just heard yesterday, Peters pretty squarely saying, if there's a change made, it's up to Dan Quinn. Are you buying that, or do you think this was a Peters call? That was the original report, that Kingsbury was in trouble because he and the GM were not seeing eye to eye. This was Quinn, by the way. This is when we knew there was trouble in paradise, Danny. As soon as he was asked yesterday, what kind of year do you think Cliff Kingsbury had? And he answered like this. He couldn't give him a compliment. You knew it was over.
Yeah, we're going through all the coaches. Cliff, offensively, defensively, on the teams wide. And so that's really what we're digging into, Nikki, to find what's best, how do we do it, where do we find spaces to improve, and for Cliff, for Joe, for Larry, for all of us, like, that's our main focus, like, so we're never in this space again, and that's what we want to dig in hard on.
So right then I thought, oh,
huh,
Adam Peters is not the only guy that's got an issue with Cliff Kingsbury. So does Dan Quinn.
There's a huge bucket of what needs to be improved. That's all. There's a bunch of names, and a couple of them aren't here anymore, right? I mean, that was pretty telling. There was a great opportunity to say, yeah, Cliff had it tough this year, right? That with all the injuries and not having Jaden and everything that happened with McCorn, not that they would name these names, but it was pretty obvious. The guy made chicken salad out of you know what, in some cases. Depends on if your glass half full, half empty. But to me, this feels like a Peters thing. I think Dan Quinn is here as a relationship builder, a consensus guy. I think he's here because the answer is yes, right? You don't, they weren't interested in Mike Vrabel. They weren't interested in a big personality that's going to do it his way, that's going to have independent stuff, that's going to fight, et cetera. Dan Quinn is a guy that wasn't as sought after in terms of getting another shot at being a head coach. I think this was a, we'll you know, be able to brainstorm, be hive mind here, and that's one way to do it. I'm not anti that, simply saying I think that's the relationship.
Never forget that they were flying all over the country for a bunch of their interviews, and Dan Quinn was seen and talked to, like, Nikki Javala at the airport, flying out coach.
Yeah, the same gate we have to go through, then connect to Charlotte, and then end up right. at spring training or whatever.
He came here to the facility, and he's coming in and out that way. Meanwhile, they're flying to, you know, Detroit to go talk to Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn and those guys. Tells you a little bit about where everyone started at the beginning of that search. But that's the question for you, is do you think this decision was more about Peters or Quinn? What I'm told is that it's more about Quinn. That this was his call to make, that he's got one more shot at this thing, basically. He's going to do it the way he wants to, as best he can. That report, though, man, the general manager at odds with a coordinator is odd. Those guys don't typically, you know, they're not interacting that much, as Jay Gruden told us on the show yesterday, you wouldn't think. And that's when we knew trouble was in paradise. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Jamal in Northeast D.C. What's up, Jamal?
Hey, what's going on, Grand Dan?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, Happy New Year to you guys.
It's you, buddy.
You too. Happy New Year, sir.
Appreciate it. I think it was more so of DQ. I do feel like it was one of those influenced by AP decisions, though. Like, I feel like it's one of those, hey, man, I'm not feeling this. This is what I would do type of thing. And then Dan Quinn kind of used that influence from AP to ultimately make the decision. But I'll say this, I'm as a fan, I'm happy it happened. I'm not one of these people who wanted Cliff back. I felt like Cliff, from the outside looking in, has shown inconsistency to make adjustments, man. I'm not a fan of this my system type of people. Like, I feel like you have to adjust to the people you have available as far as players, man, and you have to put them in positions to do things that they'll succeed at and not necessarily what you see in your head, but your scheme.
Right, like the definition typically of being a good coach is being malleable and able to adjust to personnel, and it does feel like he runs the thing that he runs, and you get in where you fit in. There is some of that, where if you're saying, like, my point all along has been, I wouldn't have fired him. I would have kept him around. I would have wanted him to incorporate some of these other elements. But maybe they go to him and say that, and he says, thank you for the recommendation. Please close my door on
your way. Yeah, I appreciate
out.
It. Don't let the door hit you.
Alton in Richmond, you're on Grant and Danny. What's up?
Yeah, I'm going to blame AP to have something to do with Cliff Kingsbury. And the reason why I said it, because he shouldn't get a free pass his own self, because look at all of the dumb stuff that he did throughout the season. Jaden get hurt. You don't Terry get hurt. You don't put nobody out there. You put no name players out there that you could have got players from free agency. You didn't bother to do that. You just and then on top of it, if you had a say so into everything, why didn't you try to ramp up the defense? Everybody that went down and got hurt. I'm a diehard Washington fan. I've been a diehard fan for 45 years. You cannot tell me that these people, half of the radio people that listen, that commentates on the radio and all that, knew half of these people that Adam Peters and Dan Quinn kept bringing in there to play for us that we didn't even know. Dre Jackson, you going to come in there? He already injured when you get him. Why? I mean, it was dumb stuff that you was doing that would make you think, instead of Cliff being gone, you should have been gone, because you used draft picks to get Lattimore. Out of 2 years with us, Lattimore got one interception.
Thank you, buddy.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, look, they swung and missed some. And Peters would tell you, as an executive, you know, his batting average is not 1,000, obviously. The idea that he should be gone, I'll disagree with. NFC Championship game last year got you the get-out-of-jail-free card that they used this year. And I would say that about Quinn, by the way. And I would say that about Cliff, by the way. I don't know why that same standard doesn't really apply. And I mentioned this earlier when we had John Keim on, and if you missed that conversation, you can podcast it wherever you get your audio. But if the argument about, you know, Peter's seat warming or Quinn's seat warming begins and ends with, look at last year, man. 1 year, one NFC championship game. Like, why doesn't Kingsbury get that same benefit of the doubt? Let's go to Brian, who's in Tyson's on the Fan. Hey, Brian.
What's going on, boys?
Hey, buddy.
Got a question. I haven't heard, this is kind of a different angle. I haven't heard anything about this, but what if DQ knows he's probably in his last year, he might be on the hot seat next year, and there's been talk about Cliff maybe being a potential head coach somewhere. You think maybe he sat Cliff down and said, look, if you end up getting that call, are you going to take it? And if so, I don't want to be behind the eight ball. Like, I don't want to pick the bottom of the barrel for OCs. I haven't heard that angle, but you think that's a possibility?
I do. So that would be the most benign version of all of this. Right, I mean, we had Michael Phillips on the Beltway Blitz a moment ago, GP, and he said this is all, I forget the word he used exactly, but not nefarious, but malicious, I think was kind of how he said it, where it's a, yeah, by the way, we're going to be moving on, good luck finding new jobs, and we can call it mutual if you want to, right? Whereas the other guys, they sort of dismissed, because they knew that Kingsbury was going to be different from Joe Witt, whose unit failed and was already replaced, you know, demoted, whatever you want to call it, midseason. But that is the, nobody's mad at anybody. The backdrop is the report, by the way, from Diana Rossini and
right,
kind of what happened here. But that's the most, no, nobody's feelings are hurt. This is a, we'd actually just like to not pick from the last candidate. We need to know if you're going to get a head coaching job, are you going to take it? Then it might be in our best interest for you to move and you for, you know, for us to start looking now, for you to start doing interviews. You're not tied to anything. That's the rosiest version. I don't buy that, but there's probably some grain of truth of that in the story.
I would love for that to have been the case. It's not the reality of it. You know, just I've heard too many things from too many people over the last 2 days now as to the bristling that was taking place in the building and the relationship fractures over the course of this year. Now we've got to dig in on what they were, why they were, right? Run past balance, what does that mean exactly? I don't think it's as simple as the percentage of the time that you run the ball. You know, a more traditional-looking NFL offense to Jaden to develop in. What are you referencing exactly? Is that an under-center versus gun thing? Is that an RPO versus traditional run game thing? But, you know, they had a meeting today where they got together, they meaning Quinn and Cliff, to discuss how they thought to best move forward to get the most out of Jaden in the years ahead and how this offense should look in the next few years. They didn't agree on enough things. That's why they parted ways. I don't think it was a situation where Cliff is definitively going to get a job because, by the way, he is less likely to get a head coaching
this
job
year than last year.
Right now than he is likely. Let's go to Mark, who's in Largo on the Fan. Hey, Mark.
This is clearly an Adam Peters move, man. Look, I called you guys back in August. I told you and I told the Junkies. And I told and I told Finley and B. Mitch. This was a smokescreen. Everybody in their mama thought that Cliff, when he came to the podium to talk about what he was complaining about with the offense, he was talking about Terry McLaurin. No, he was talking about Adam Peters. I knew right then and there there was a problem. I've been saying for the last 3 months, on your station, maybe not on your show, but definitely on the Junkies and on Kevin and everybody else's show, that Cliff was going to leave. Everybody said, no, you're crazy, man. He ain't going. And I probably said it on this show, too. I thought you could tell the body language. You could tell the body language yesterday. If I would, first of all, let me say this. I think the media in this town is kind of wimped on asking tough questions anymore. They used to ask tough questions galore when it came to Bruce Allen. But they didn't do that at all yesterday. I felt like the question should have been a lot harder at Adam, directed at Adam. I mean, AP, I mean, Quinn is one thing. This is all on Adam Peters, man. It's all on Adam Peters.
Appreciate you, Mark.
Thank you, dude.
I wonder if that tone changes more as we get further away. Like, again, he's here for 1 year. They have the success he has. This is the second year. So you're just not going to have the same...
There shouldn't be the same venom,
vitriol,
frankly. Yeah.
As the guy that was perpetual loser, who probably had no business being a NFL general manager in Bruce Allen. You were brought in to do business stuff, and you kind of just weaseled your way over to running the football operation, too, essentially. I mean, Adam Peters, who has won Super Bowls as a scout in New England and come up with the Broncos, winning a Super Bowl and then running San Francisco's drafts, winning an NFC championship game. You know, this is a guy that has the pelts on the wall. So there's a reverence for, I think, the way he's operated. But I agree with you. Like, it is time to, you know, take the kid gloves off a little bit with Peters, with Quinn this offseason. I just think you're going to get a little further away from quite literally the best year this team has had in over 30 years before you start asking for people to really start getting upset or angry. Like, 1 year ago was the best year of my lifetime, and it was the only year Peters was ever in charge of before this one.
Right. You got some deposits in the bank. Now, we do this five more times. Yeah, let's do that. Let's have the winning off the field site press conference where Bruce Allen is stumbling over every word, et cetera. But that, I don't think it was warranted yesterday. But to his larger point, it could have been more venomous, and I think it would have been in bounds for it to be that way.
Bill's on the show at 5 in less than 20 minutes. We'll talk to Jacory Crosskeep Merritt about Cliff Kingsbury. So you'll want to be listening to that coming up at 5 p.m. Right now we're asking you, who do you think is more responsible for the decision to move on from Cliff Kingsbury, Dan Quinn, your head coach, or Adam Peters, the general manager? This is The Fan. Curious to see what Bill's going to have to say about a change on the offensive side. Cliff Kingsbury's out after two productive seasons in D.C. Offensive efficiency this year wasn't kind to him and the Commanders. They went from 5th 1 year ago to 22nd this year. Not having your starting quarterback, not having your wide receiver one among many other key starters throughout the year, a factor in that for sure. Danny, who do you think is bigger in the decision? Who do you think is more responsible for the ousting of Cliff Kingsbury, the coach, Quinn, or the GM, Peters?
I think it's Peters. I think Peters is the strong-willed alpha. It's his personality, his image, his designs, his things, and he presents a collaborative environment. But part of that collaboration, I think, is agreeing with him. And I'd rather have that, by the way, than the head coach-centric nonsense of Rivera and company and whatever you want to call it. But I think this is a Peters production. You know, I think what time we do this, that, and the other. I think how hot the breakfast food is. I think it's Peters. I think Peters decides his culture, his everything. I think Dan Quinn is here because he's willing to get along with that.
So it's his building, there's no doubt. And this is something I've said for a while. I think Dan Quinn is here because Adam Peters wanted someone that he could have a good relationship with, which is super important and a good reason to hire someone. And I think those guys do see eye to eye on a lot, and Dan Quinn goes along with a lot. I do think this was probably more Quinn's call. Do I think Peters is cool with it? Absolutely. Do I think that Diana's report's correct that he and Cliff didn't always see eye to eye? Would Peters also want some more traditional NFL-looking stuff? Definitely. But I think whether it's because Quinn's been talking to Peters about this and it's in his head or not, I think he's a pretty old-school guy. Like, this is a tale as old as time, too. A defensive-minded head coach who wants an offensive-minded guy calling plays to think more about the defense and to be more complimentary and to do things that put the defense at odds less. That's pretty common, pretty normal, and I think that's probably a lot of what's happening. Let's go to Usman in New York listening on the Odyssey app. What's up, Usman?
What's going on, guys? So first of all, unsportsmanlike conduct on Grant, you cannot call Danny out like that. So I just wanted to throw that out.
That was
there.
Tough. Now, the only reason I did it was because many, many times he's called me out for, like, following Livy Dunn and some other people. So I thought it was just an evening of the playing field.
Yeah, quid pro quo. No problem there.
Yeah. Okay, had he never done that to me, I wouldn't have done it to him.
That's fine. Replay the down. Okay, no worries. So two things real quick. First off, I definitely think this is heavily AP. I think he's saying, you know, 2 years in a row, you've gotten my biggest investment hurt in some way, shape, or form. Now, they haven't reported that to us, but they know behind the scenes, broken ribs 1 year, a litany of injuries this year, and he must have told DQ, like, listen, you got to cut this out right now or else, dot, dot, dot. And it seemed like DQ kind of got that message. He seemed a lot more frantic, aggressive, pointed in his speech yesterday, like, we're not going to let this expletive happen again and blah, blah, blah. And I think he just kind of read the writing on the wall and said, well, okay, you know, Cliff has to go. I think it's AP because we've seen how reluctant DQ is to fire his own staff or make changes or whatever with Joe Witt. So,
well, I don't know. Can we say that anymore? I mean, yes, he didn't fire him in season, but he's now fired both of his coordinators in two seasons on the job and within a year of an NFC championship game. So it's not like he's proven to be someone who overly evaluates and analyzes continuity as this significant thing. Zeke in Southeast, I believe, thinks that maybe they've already got their OC lined up. What's up, Zeke?
No. Hey, love your show, guys.
Appreciate you.
I think I'm coming from a different perspective. I think Kingsbury went to them and said, hey, I'm going for a coaching job. There's six new coaching jobs, and two of them need quarterbacks. And think about it. If you're a general manager of another team, Cliff had a rookie quarterback who led the team to the NFC Championship. I'd rather have somebody like that working with my young quarterback. So I think Kingsbury approached them and said, hey, I'm going to focus on this coaching job, and I promise you he's going to get one.
But Zeke, guess what? So first of all,
thank you, buddy.
Dollar bet on if he gets one or not. That's fine. I hope he does. I hope you're right. I think he could get a head coaching job. I'm not banking on it. But he could interview for any of those jobs. They would give him permission while keeping the gig. He wouldn't ask to be released from this job to try to get a head coaching job. It's not like they're in the playoffs and you're multitasking
right.
like last year. You literally would spend every hour of every day focusing on those jobs, and this is just your fallback. You're not giving up your multiple million-dollar a year coordinating job working with future MVP candidate Jaden Daniels because you want to be a head coach. If you don't get a job, see last year where the right thing didn't become available, the jobs you would have wanted, Tampa, Bowles stays, Chicago goes with Ben Johnson, whatever, then you say, okay, I'll just keep doing this. So if the Commanders...
Especially while he's still getting paid by the Cardinals.
Right. If the Commanders said to him, hey, we're not letting you interview for head coaching jobs, and it's either he has to leave to do that, or you get to, basically have to stay here. Okay, maybe, but that's not the case. They would have gladly allowed him to interview while keeping him around, like they did last year, by the way, when he interviewed and could have gotten the Saints job that he turned down. Carlos in Alexandria, what's good?
Hey, guys, good topic. I'm with the guy three calls ago, by the way. I was amazed at how softball that press conference was yesterday. There was no one that asked directly about the big report that everybody was talking about. And so I think what we're in here is we're in kind of a real switch now in media coverage of this firm, which I think has been in, sort of a hangover from Danny, and people want this to succeed so much. There hasn't been any of this. This was sprung on us late in the season, the day before the season ended, and none of it in Hard Knocks. There's been none of this. Why did all the reporters look so surprised at this?
Appreciate you, dude.
Nationally, too, by the way. It came out via Rossini of The Athletic, a national reporter.
I think you said it to a degree. Again, when you do what nobody in this organization has done for 3+ decades, there is goodwill built up. When you treat people really well, there is some goodwill built up. And that's what these guys have done to this point. So I think, yeah, to a degree, you're not as busy hunting for some of the negative stories, and maybe a lot of fans are crying out for that as a team is flailing and struggling and they can't get right and they played the same veterans the same number of minutes to eke out a win against the team that didn't give a damn in the final week of the season. But you're right. I think you answered your own question. That's how we got there.
At 5:25, should Jaden Daniels have any input in what happens next at coordinator, or should he have had input in keeping Cliff Kingsbury? He clearly wanted them to. There's a report from Fox Sports that he's not happy about the decision to move on from Kingsbury. We'll get into that coming up in about a half hour. Next, though, Bill joins us live on The Fan. What does he think about his play caller and OC being out today? You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan.